This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello, and after the remarkable rollercoaster of the last few months, the most eagerly awaited event since the opening weekend of the new Wicked movie has finally arrived. Just like Glinda and Elphaba, the Chancellor has been trying to work her magic amidst a rather complex and challenging set of circumstances. Today, we will be perusing the smorgasbord and looking inside the box to confirm if Schrodinger's cat really is dead or alive. But James, let's start with the economist's perspective. Can you give us the key headlines on what's happened and what the implications are?
Thanks, Laura. Yeah, as an economist, we're interested in the growth outlook, the inflation outlook, what it means for the Bank of England, and ultimately the credibility of our public finances. I have to say that the leak was very fortunate for me because it meant you didn't have to listen to those reading off the numbers by the Chancellor. You had it all down for you, so I'm probably better prepared than we would have been. The big headline is that we have more headroom than before. We have £22 billion of headroom against the fiscal rules versus £10 billion before. That's a more normal amount of headroom. Why is that good? Well, hopefully it means we get less speculation each year about which taxes are going to go up next, and that can give businesses a bit of certainty, particularly as well as they've changed. It's now only having one event per year to review the public finances rather than two, because there was some rushed welfare reforms in the spring, and then they got voted down by the backbench MPs. So that was a missed opportunity to make some longer term changes because they were chasing short term borrowing forecasts. So I think that's a welcome development that was pushed by the IMF. The other big issue is that, as you said, the smorgasbord of policies, we didn't get as many as was feared. And that was partly because although the OBR did revise down its growth forecasts, wage inflation has been higher than it previously assumed. And that's good news for the public finances, particularly because they've frozen those income tax thresholds. So more and more people are paying tax or paying the high rate of tax. So the effective rate of tax has gone up. And so that's been an unexpected boost from the OBR to the public finances. So that's why we have a bit more headroom. The other news is that the OBR's forecasts are a bit more credible than before. They're now at the upper end of the range of consensus, whereas before they were outside the range of consensus. So they were always seen as a bit optimistic. Why are you so optimistic relative to the Bank of England, for example? So that cast doubt on how reliable the idea that we would balance the books was. Now they're at the upper end, which is still somewhat optimistic, but recent productivity data has been good, and we obviously have that AI conversation, and we're seeing academic papers showing in the US at least job freezes in hiring for younger people because companies are adopting AI, and that's, we've blogged about that, is usually a sign of technological progress. What about the implications for the Bank of England? Well, it's pretty mixed. In the short term, there is more borrowing. And in actual fact, they're loosening fiscal policy in year three. It's only in years four and five that the tax hikes really bite. The Bank of England sets interest rates to control inflation, but puts much more emphasis on years one, two and three than it does for years four and five when setting monetary policy. So at the margin, this is actually pushing against the Bank of England wanting to deliver more on faster rate cuts. But on the other hand, there was direct action to cut inflation by as much as 0.5% in the second quarter of next year by delaying a fuel duty increase and also taking action to cut electricity bills. Why is this so important? Well, the Bank of England has fears about the non-linearity, so a step change in how wage and price setting behaviour acts once inflation breaches 3.5%. And at the moment, we are at that kind of dangerous threshold of about 3.75%. So anything that reduces inflation is going to keep inflation expectations anchored. And so consumers and workers will accept more normal wage increases, and companies won't be putting on these extra surcharges in their price setting. That's the hope, at least. The other thing on terms of politics is it was a budget to appease the left of the party. As investors, as Joseph will come on to show, there has been fears of the lasting ability of Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves. Will they be challenged? And the mansion tax doesn't raise much money, but that, the non-labour income increase in tax, the extension of child benefit, does appease the left of the party, does help in the local elections next year fight back against the Greens, which are becoming increasingly popular. So that's helpful from a government stability perspective. The main problem is just this timing that it's more boring in the short term. It's tightening in years 4 and 5. We've heard this story before. We were supposed to see a drag on the economy from fiscal tightening, helping the Bank of England cut interest rates already, but spending has overshot. How many of these tax hikes will be delivered? Some of them are after the next election. Will we continue to see spending surprise on the upside? That's the big danger. So from the Bank of England, as I said, very mixed, because there's no credible fiscal tightening in the short term, but there was action to reduce inflation. So the Bank of England probably will still cut interest rates again in December, but it was fairly mixed from that perspective.
Thanks, James. That's great. Turning to Joe now, I guess it's fair to say we've had worse experiences related to budgets and gilt markets. Can you give us a quick overview of what the market reaction has been and how this might affect investment portfolios?
Thanks, Laura. I think to provide everyone with a bit of context for those who don't have it, in the gilt market, fiscal sustainability has been the buzzword in debt markets globally for the last couple of years. The UK is roughly around 95% debt to GDP in current markets. And so, as James highlighted, the fiscal headroom was the number that the market was focusing on yesterday. And despite the slight hiccup of the OBR issuing their report 45 minutes before the Chancellor stood up, the market was very reassured that that number was above the top end of most people's expectations in terms of the amount of headroom that they would have, and therefore the gilt market, the number that they focus on is how much would there need to be in additional gilt issuance as a result of any extra spending that goes on, and that number came out around 5 billion. So to put that 5 billion in context, the UK currently issues about 300 billion of gilts a year. So a 5 billion increase is not a huge number in the grand scheme of things. We went from 299 billion to about 304 billion, 305 billion, something of that order of magnitude. And so in terms of where we've been in the gilt market, we will have all heard about the fact that and know about the fact that the base rate, the Bank of England base rate, has been going up. And then of late, because of the factors that James has touched on around the fact that inflation, although it has been stubbornly high, inflation has been coming down, and that is a factor that has played out globally, so in the US and in the Eurozone, and therefore we've been cutting base rate, and that has finally been felt in the longer end of the gilt market. So UK 10-year yields peaked earlier in the year at around 4.9%. They're currently somewhere between 4.4 and 4.5% at 10 years. And so that big change has been seemingly we may be at that inflection point in the gilt market where gilt yields have peaked. And certainly the news yesterday was positive for the gilt market. We saw a move of the order of 0.1% or 10 basis points, depending on how you like to think about it, in gilt rates. And that was broadly across the curve. And it was not a global move either. That move was very much UK specific and led by the budget. So there wasn't much move in US Treasuries, for example, or German Bunds. It was all UK specific moves and relatively positive. Now, opening up today, we've seen that some investors have been taking profit on those positions, and the gilt market has sold off a little bit, but not given back all the gains from yesterday. So overall, pretty positive news on the market side, and we can touch later on the issuance side as well.
Well, yes, actually, Joe, we've already had a question come through about that. I suppose when you were talking about 300 billion of issuance every year, it sounds like a lot, especially when we think about the context of pension scheme liabilities and, you know, the overall size of that now in the UK. Is it something that investors should be worrying about, especially those who currently hold a lot of gilts?
Yeah, I think that is the reason why, in relative terms, relative to some measures of risk-free interest rates, gilts have been getting cheaper. Historically, gilts traded at about 0.5% above swap risk-free rates, and of late, that has been broadly closer to somewhere between 80 and 90 basis points, 0.8, 0.9% above. So that cheapening is a reflection of, you could argue it's a measure of the credit worthiness of the UK government. And so all being equal, that number being slightly higher is a reflection of that fact that we do have a lot of debt to get away. Also, at the time when the investor base is changing in terms of gilts, and we know that the DB market is very well mature, and our average client hedge ratios are probably somewhere between 90 and 95%, and so they've done a lot of the gilt buying that they need to do. And the slack in the issuance that's been taken up by other investors has been the bank sector has upped its allocation to somewhere between 30% and 40%. Insurers have also been taking down lots of that issuance, and also the overseas buyers of gilts have increased as a proportion of the issuance to somewhere of the order of 30%. So a diversified investor base is good for the debt management office. They would rather that there are lots of different buyers so that they're not too reliant on one particular buyer. And interestingly, the DMO announced yesterday that there's a consultation around the usage and the size of the T-bills, so that's sub 1 year UK government bonds or UK government issuance, and increasing the size of that, because the size of that market has not changed materially despite the size of money market funds increasing significantly. So money market funds would be typical buyers of that type of issuance, and it's just another way of diversifying that investor base further and shortening the maturity of the debt in overall terms.
No, well, I think that's a good place to finish. We really appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.